Live from Crestview Studios, Florida, it's the Dave and Duke Collins Show. And now here's your co-host, Speak Free Radio owner David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke. Limber up your dialing fingers.
Hello, folks. This is Dave Gahari, and you are listening to the Dave and Duke Collins Show. Thank you, Liz. I guess I'm coming through loud and clear. And it is April 7th. There you go. Already April, right? Unbelievable. And it is 6:02 p.m. Central Time. So figure that out for where you're at. We don't know exactly what time it is where you're at. Most likely. And we are on speakfreeradio.com. If you go to speakfreeradio.com, you'll see the little black triangle facing to the right and a yellow circle. And I understand that there are some folks who are colorblind, which sucks, and they can't see certain colors. But anyway, it's a circle. And I don't know what yellow looks like to colorblind folks, or most colorblind folks. But anyway, that's where you press play. And you can hear it right on the computer, on your phone, if you want to. So your phone is a little phone icon. Computer to the left, you got to click on that if you're on your phone and are in the car. And if you look at the menu there on the computer, it's to the left. On the phone, I think it's vertical from top to bottom in the middle. You'll see call and chat and podcasts. If you click on the call and chat button, you can click on whatever show you're listening to, their particular icon, and that will bring you into the waiting room in the studio if you have a question or comment. If you click on podcasts, you can see all the shows that are there. The top line are the top lines are original programming. The bottom are original programming that are not on the network anymore for one reason or another. So that's how to listen to the previous shows. And there's tons, hundreds upon hundreds and hundreds of shows that are on. Of course, Giuseppe and I are doing our show this Thursday. That is from, let's see, that's on the schedule, it'll be 1 to 3 Eastern. So you can hear our show. It's just a call-in show. Similar to this one. And then we have another new show. The first one premiered yesterday, last night, the Ryan Massano show. That followed Hoax Busters. And that's a fellow out in California who goes in front of those city councils and who tells them off and tells them all about Jews, which is great to watch Ryan doing that. So he's on right after this show, the Dave and Duke Call-In Show. From 9 to 11 Eastern. So check him out. And he's going to be on every weekend. And let me give you the ongoing challenge, which is if anyone can let us know, live on the air, of a greater existential threat to humanity and free speech other than organized international Jewry, please let us know, and we will quit the show immediately. Alongside that, if anybody knows a more effective deliverer of that message about Jewish supremacy and the threat that they pose, other than Dr. David Duke, you let us know, and we will quit right away. Or as Dave has said, he'd love to meet that person or that threat, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen, right, Dave?
I don't think so, but I hope so. I would love for someone to come along and do a better job than you and I.
I doubt it.
I think there are people that do very excellent jobs. I like a lot of the young people right now that are working in this cause, and a lot of older people as well that are very well spoken on these issues. Ron Utz, for instance, of the Utz report and so forth, does a great job. And I suggest his website. It's got a lot of great articles. And he looks like he's, to me, like he's reading my stuff and listening to my programs as well, reading my books, because he's using the same examples that I popularized years and years ago. And,
yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure he is. Absolutely.
And that's good. And that, I'm happy for that. I'm not jealous of it. I don't feel like he's stealing my stuff. I'm happy that he's using my material because I think our stuff is the best because we get down to the issues and the facts that prove our points. For instance, I had a pretty good discussion the other day with some folks on the arguments that we've been making about the whole Gaza thing from the very beginning and how that a lot of people have come around to the points that I laid out in the very first days after October 7. So from the very first days of October 7, I was just looking into what are the facts of the matter. And they told us what proved to us that the Gaza fighters, that they were terrorists and they were like ISIS and they were baby killers. Well, they beheaded 40 babies, they told us. They told us they were just murdering women and children. And I started looking into that. Even after a few days, they already killed thousands of children in Gaza within a few weeks. But I looked into what was the death toll of children. Now, we know the total death toll, according to government. It was 12, then it went to 14, then it went back to 11. And now I think the official toll is around 1,000, but it's still well over 1,000 people. And the Israeli government has good records. They know the names and the pictures of all the people that died. The government knows their ages. The government knows their sex. And the government also kept pretty good track of rapes or sexual assaults. Israel has rape centers in practically every police station, every hospital in the country. And they're real big on that in Israel. And so we knew all these things. And interestingly enough, there was not a single forensically documented case of rape against any of the people, even though we have their bodies. We have the New York Times make up a big phony story about this woman with the most graphic details of how she was raped or how her body was naked from the waist down. But if she was naked, it was because of the bombs and so forth. The Israelis, what they call those missiles, those Stinger missiles. Not, what do they call them? Fire something missiles. And they create tremendous explosions. And but we know that the big family, which they pictured on the New York Times, the family members, about this woman that was raped in its most graphic and horrible destructions, no pictures, of course, not even any blurred out pictures. And we discover from the family that, no, they saw the body. The family members talked to the woman who was allegedly raped on the phone. They were talking to her on the phone within 3 minutes where she supposedly was raped by four or five people, according to a, quote, eyewitness, which totally forgot his story. He got his story confused. And it was written by a bunch of Jews in the New York Times. And it was all a lie. But anyway, so I looked up, so I just did some Google searches. And I said, okay, we know how many Palestinian children because, you know, the photographs were there. We saw them. We saw the babies. We saw the hospitals. We knew that was going on, and we had pretty good figures on that, even though a lot of them, if anything, the figures were low because a lot of these kids are buried in the rubble, and it was horrific. And it was horrific numbers of maimed and burned and amputated children and children that were later died because they couldn't get the antibiotics and couldn't get the treatment they needed because the Jews were attacking all the hospitals to prevent these kids and adults from getting help. So I started asking how many Israeli children died on October 7th. And I couldn't find an answer. I mean, I did about 30 or 40 Google searches. And about after about a week, I finally got an answer from some of the Israeli press. And it was actually from Ynet News, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, as they started giving the figures. First, they said 26. Then they ultimately said the final figure was 36 Israeli children, which were supposedly killed by Hamas. And by the way, the evidence that these kids were killed directly or purposefully by Hamas individually is very thin. But we know what Israeli 2,000-pound American bombs do. These 2,000-pound bomb, and you're a military man, I think you have an idea about this, the degree of nitro in that, the degree of TNT in that kind of a bomb is amazing. You can blow up an entire block. That's not a precision weapon. And Gaza is 2.4 million people population. So when you use a 2.4 million population crammed into a small area where there's no place for them even to run to, and with 2,000-pound bombs, you're going to kill a lot of people. You're going to kill whatever proportion of children is in society, and about 40% of the population is the age of children, and that's exactly what you get. So I looked at this, and they were coming up with, and right now they have a death toll. Oh, it's crazy. It's a death toll of around 14 to 15,000 children. That's not counting a lot of them that were buried alive and not found yet, their bodies, and others that died from the effects later. But if you look at that, you know, that figure, that's an enormous figure. And, 13,000, 14,000 is crazy. It's now up to something like 34, 35,000 civilians, at least. There's probably a lot more than that. I mean, overall dead. And another 75 to 80,000 wounded or maimed. A lot of people think it's at least 100,000. But the point is, I looked this up, and I couldn't find any, just a straight shot, you know, how many Israeli children died. And then I finally found it in Ynet News, and it gave the exact Israeli figures of 36. So, I mean, I want people, any of our listeners, this is why that we do feel we express things the best way here. Now, some people have been talking about these figures as much as I have, but this has been, that should have been the first thing to go against, because the Jews and the Jewish newspapers, they broadcast to the world that there are 40 beheaded babies in Gaza.
No evidence, right?
There was no evidence of any beheaded babies. And we know specifically. I mean, they have exact records. They put the
pictures.
Dave,
it's quarter after. We got to get to the call.
I will in a second. But, you know, we start a lot with a lot of housekeeping in the show first. But I just want to get this point out. It's a really important point. And it's a point that you all can use with your friends and your family. If they're immovable, here's something you can really use with them, right? That really can hopefully can touch their heart if they have any heart left in them or any brain that works anymore, right? So, all right. So they use it. These figures, and you know, they say, okay, this is nothing more than ISIS. This is nothing more than these people are monsters, and all these stories were lies. The whole thing about the rapes were lies. This is only to make the Palestinians seem like they are animals, that they are just monsters who are just raping men and women. Why are they doing that? It gives people the justification in their own mind to go and just wipe them all out. Because you're able to just kill people in mass the way Israel's doing this. And by the way, there have been more babies and more civilians that have been killed in just these 6 months of war than all the rest of the wars in the world combined in the last, you know, 3 years. This one area. But the point is that if 36 Israeli children die now, if the Palestinians are monsters and they're terrorists, and that's what they're saying, and they're not even human beings, and their government, the Hamas, should be disabled because they killed 36 children on that day. Then we look at the Israelis before October 7th, just since 2000 to 2023. the records are, and they are clear, and they're done by international authorities. They keep the records very clearly. They're unbiased. They're not by Palestinian figures alone. And they show that over 11, 12,000 Palestinians have been killed, including about 40 to 50% of those children, and over 70% if you combine women and children, who are obviously not Hamas fighters. So if you look at 36 children dead out of 1,000 or whatever, 1,100, whatever it is, and you compare that to what Israel did, they killed 10,000 people, but they killed 4,000 children in the process, more than that probably, and probably at least 7,000, more than 7,000 women and children, well, more than 7,000, more than 70%. So, and that's conservative figures, right? And this was in a series of raids. And this, so every single raid they made, they killed far more children than a percentage that Hamas killed. So if Hamas is terrorist, if this justifies destroying all of Hamas and killing all the people of Hamas and starving them to death and making sure they don't have any hospitals, don't have anything, destroy their schools, destroy their universities, destroy their hospitals, their health care, make sure they don't have any water to drink, make sure they die of the poisoning of the water and the infection of the water. If this makes Hamas a terrorist organization and them to deserve being annihilated, then they just made a much, much stronger case for Israel and the Jews who committed these atrocities against Gaza and committed 75 years of ethnic cleansing, hatred, atrocities, murder, and rape, and everything else, and imprisonment. Now, as far as the hostages are concerned, one more click thing, and this is why. This is why we're the best at this, I think. One more fact. Every time they talk about the 200 or 300 hostages were taken, maybe they got 150 left, who knows. They released a lot of them already. During the time, and we're talking not in Gaza, but in the West Bank, where the Israeli, quote, settlers, these monsters, have been killing Palestinians by the hundreds, and they've been arresting them by the thousands. They put them in the jail. They kidnapped them. They don't even have any formal charges. It's just a military order, just going, we're going to pick them up and throw them in prison. They torture them there. They molest the children that are in there. And this is all Save the Children had a big story about this not long ago. But you don't get that story on 60 Minutes. You don't get that story in your major media. So if you look at that, what's going on right now, so they took far more hostages. But even before, in the 1 year before the October 7th, they took 10 times more hostages of Palestinians than what the Palestinians took. The reason they took some hostages is because they wanted to use those hostages to get their men, women, and children out of prison and out of the torture chambers of Israel. And, you know, and by the way, they went into Gaza and took a lot of those people, too. They don't even talk about that. They say, we shouldn't have peace until they let free those hostages. Well, they took hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of more hostages since even October 7. And in the West Bank, which has not revolted against the government, not committed any crimes, didn't take part in October 7th. They've taken hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of hostages in these places. But this is never talked about by our Jewish media.
No, of course not.
And why?
And it never will.
Our Jewish media.
Exactly. And it's not our Jewish media. It's their Jewish media.
Well, it's our Jewish in the sense that it's Jewish media in our country.
Unfortunately.
But it's not the media of the American people, the Christian people.
Of course not. It's an alien media. Yes.
It's an alien media. That's right. It's a monster media. It's a media that's promoting genocide of children.
It's filth. All right, let's get to the calls. We got a big lineup here. Let's bring in Goose. Goose, you got the floor, my friend. The floor is yours, Goose.
Are you Black Pigeon today?
No. Goose fell out. I think this is Rich from the UK. Hasidic Hassel. Yeah, I bet.
Hello.
You.
How's it going?
Got him.
You getting good at this guy?
Yes, thank you. You haven't been here for like a month?
Oh, it's been a while, yeah. I've been some traveling. I've been to Uzbekistan and explored Tashkent, Samarkand, Bukhara, the old Silk Road. A lot of things has happened in my absence. Like, I wanted to ask the doctor what he thought of the attack on Moscow. Who do you think was responsible for paying the money for the attackers to carry out this heinous attack? And again, it was mostly civilians. They were unarmed. They didn't have the right to bear arms, so they couldn't shoot back. There was, I think, three British aid workers who were killed, I think, in deliberate cold blood, as it happens, in Israel. And this hasn't stopped the likes of seven. And Boris Johnson, the former prime minister, said that, oh, no, we need to support Israel 100%. So, you know, you see all of these things happening.
I mean, of course, it's all lies. Everything they're saying is lies. They acted like they didn't know. They didn't know this. You know, they have these drones. They have perfect cameras on them. They're able to fly anywhere. They have complete air supremacy over Gaza. No danger. They didn't have any risk to their own lives there. These drones can be precise in their targeting. They're very precise in identifying anything. So the people that were taking the aid in, the food, just starving men, women, and children. And these were people from Western countries. There was an American there. There were a couple of Britishers, you know, other people from outside of Palestine. And it's like, so they go in there. And they call them up and saying, yeah, we're coming to this aid. We're coming there. We told them exactly what their route was. So they told the authorities all that clearly. They were on the phone with them at the time when they just blew them to hell. And they tracked them down. There was nobody even with a gun in the cars, even though you need some security in something like that. And it was like there was a person that was security for them that got out of one of the places, but they had no guns in the cars. The aid had a huge logo on the top of the car, big giant logo under the over the passenger seat and the rear seat, big logo for the food organization. They called them. They called them after they realized under attack, and they still just, they did this. They knew what they were doing. And it's easy to understand why they knew what they could, you know, what they were doing, because they didn't care that they were going to be, you know, whether they were going to be caught for this. They know they're going to violate every international law by doing this and doing this horrible thing against innocent people that are there because they're good Samaritans who are trying to save people who are starving to death. And bring people food. Anybody that would purposely let a child starve. I mean, if you had a neighbor and one of his kids, even his own kids, and you're not even sure the circumstance or whatever, but you think that kid is being starved, or are you purposely starving him? Or so you know somebody else is purposely starving, then you know the father's purposely starving the kid, right? What would we say about you, if you didn't try to stop the father or the friend or wherever it was that kidnapped the child and was strangling the child or starving the child, chaining the child, destroying the child's life, making the child suffer this way, what would anyone say of you? Would anyone say this was a good person? Would anyone say this was just? Would anyone, you know, have any excuses for this? I don't think.
It contravenes all international law and morality. First of all,
it contravenes everything we hold dear. I mean, none of us would stand side if we saw somebody. I guarantee, if I saw a grown man or whatever, even an older kid or something, strangling to death a little girl or a little boy, right, killing them, I would absolutely do whatever I had to do. I mean, if they had a gun, I think I'd try to stop them. I think all of us would, because at that point, our emotional commitment to a child would be to risk all. We wouldn't, you know, somehow we'd think maybe God would protect us or something, but we definitely would try to do something. We'd make every effort. We certainly wouldn't be giving the guy a gun, right? Or if his gun jammed, we'd give him another gun. We wouldn't be, if his knife broke while he was trying to stab this little child, we wouldn't go send him, you know, bigger, longer knives, right? So, I mean, no. This is the kind of evil going on, Richard, in the world. Now, as far as the ICE is concerned, we got to answer that question before we go to the next one. But, well, you know, the best way to answer these questions is what I should always ask. If Pierce Morgan would have asked me, and I went in the show, would you condemn Hamas terrorism existed on October 7th? I would have asked him right back. I would say, yeah, I would. But let me ask you a question. Before we get into this discussion, will you condemn the Israeli terrorism that killed 10,000 innocent civilians over the last years in 5, 6, 7 different operations, which killed a lot more children in each of those raids than what's alleged? And every single one of the Jewish raids, 8 raids, killed more children, every one of them, many more children than what happened on October 7th. Are you going to condemn Israel? Are you going to demand that Israel be dismantled? Or are you going to demand that we don't stop bombing Israel till we kill every soldier? And by the way, only about 10,000 to 20,000 people are in Hamas on Gaza. That's the official figures.
Dave, what about that attack in Moscow?
Well, let me finish. I'm going to finish this because I'm...
Yeah, because we got a bunch of calls.
I'm coming right back to it. But here's the deal. Okay. So, are you going to condemn... All right, the mass murders, you know, of Israel. Are you going to condemn? Are you going to say that Israel needs to be disbanded? Are you going to say that this organization should be sanctioned? That they should be killed? That we should keep the truth is that every Jewish quote man and woman goes into compulsory military service in Israel that lives there. Everyone except the Haredi that study the Talmud.
That's right. I think they're saying,
but they all do it. They all do it, right? So, and they're all taught anti-vicious crap that Gentiles, that non-Jews aren't even human beings. They deserve to be killed. They teach them genocide. They teach them this Jewish supremacism, right? And they spend time killing and imprisoning and capturing and taking hostages of thousands and thousands of Palestinians every year. And they participate in that. So the likelihood of whenever they say so many civilians died on October 7th, I guess technically you might be right. But a much higher percentage of soldiers were killed by Hamas than any time Israel makes a raid. And the fact is that the truth is it's a vastly higher number because most of those people in Israel, like these kibbutzes,
Dave, we got to get to the question.
They all have guns and they're all trained to be, radical and they're all trained to be genociders of the Palestinians. Right. That's the truth. So everything they teach you. So ISIS, the question on Russia is, okay, who caused the rise of ISIS? Okay, who paid for it? Who caused it? We had 9/11. Right? That was done by the authorities. Say it's by Al Qaeda. I think Al Qaeda is a certain part of it, and it was also sold out by America. Who caused Al Qaeda's rise? America, not America. The Jews in control of America. The State Department supported Al Qaeda, Osama bin Laden, and these terrorists. And guess what? In the country that we actually went to war against.
Dave, this Crocus Theater, that's what he's asking about.
It's not ISIS. If it was ISIS, it was Jewish-controlled ISIS. Because we know, I can show you headlines from Israel, how Israel wanted ISIS to win against Syria. That Israel wanted...
Right, but this Crocus Theater specifically...
Who do you think... No, who did it? Who did it? The Jews did it. That's who did it.
Okay.
It's the CIA who did it. It's the Jewish state
Mossad.
Of Israel that did it, which is all intertwined. The Mossad, right. and the CIA. The CIA killed Kennedy because Kennedy wanted to keep Israel from getting an atomic bomb, like, because Israel would never join the nuclear non-proliferation treaty, because Israel doesn't join any international treaties to stop chemical weapons or even biological weapons.
All right. Thanks, Dave. We got to get to the next call. Richard, thanks, buddy. We'll get you back in.
Israel is the rogue criminal terrorist state of the world.
Absolutely. Goose, are you there, buddy?
Hey, sorry, guys. I was having difficulties there.
No sweat.
Am I allowed to ask a theological question tonight?
Well, sure. We talked about Easter a couple of weeks ago, so we could do that.
Yeah, I'm just kind of Palestined out, man. But let me ask you something, Dave. I feel for the people. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to sound callous. But so we've got, you know, this blood libel on Christian children throughout the Middle Ages, right? Then we're getting into more modernity. We have the First World War the Jews caused, right? We have, you know, they're probably behind the Titanic some way. We have the founding of the ADL. The Titanic,
but they were definitely behind the Lusitania. Go ahead.
Yeah, World War II, obviously, we're involved and start getting that started. We have the USS Liberty. We have JFK. Then we have 9/11, fingerprints over all this. And then up to COVID now. So let me ask you, Dave, how can we believe anything that these people wrote down in the Old Testament? Was it the same Jews, or can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, it's a technical issue, and it's hard to know all these things. But it is not hard to understand that it's hard to prove that everything that's in all the so-called scriptures are the absolute, you know, written in stone words of God. Maybe there's some parts of it, maybe there are not, because we know that we don't have the original texts, the ones that were first written. We have texts that are hundreds of years older than the first writing, and we know that because the writing is about events, and they go up to events that hadn't existed yet. But the writings are there. So the writings are talking about events that happened long before, but none of the more recent events of history. So we know the writings of the oldest books, like the Torah, which the Jews use from the Old Testament, that these, you know, are very, very, very old writings, and that we know that they were hand copied person to person to person.
And this was pre-Talmudic, right? Or did start in the Babylonian?
Here's how it works. I'll give you a little history lesson on this that you might enjoy. So here's how it works. First of all, I'm not here to dispute anything about the Old Testament. I'm not here to dispute anything about the New Testament. Obviously, I'm a Christian. But I am a Christian. So much more recent books, which we have a lot more historical evidence of, and I do believe that Jesus was an historical figure. The Romans talked about him. Many other people talked about him. Jews talked about Jesus Christ, and they hated Jesus Christ. The fact is that I do believe if you're a Christian out there listening, or if you're a Muslim, you respect Jesus Christ, because the Islamic faith also says that Jesus Christ was the chief prophet. In fact, they even look at Christ and they say that he was, you know, a child of God, that he was resurrected. They even say that they recognize that Jesus was the greatest prophet. Literally, that's what they say.
Yeah, they say that he talked as a baby.
They actually say in there in the Quran, which I've read, because I like to read things rather than hear what people say about them.
Yeah, I've read it a little bit years ago.
What's ironic about all this? I mean, a lot of Christians obviously don't like the Quran, and I don't agree with the Quran on many things. I'm a Christian, right? At the same time, the Quran says that, in fact, they have movies about them in Arabic, right? And for instance, in Iran, I saw this movie with English subtitles in it, and it was an incredible movie honoring Jesus Christ. And in the Quran itself, it defends Jesus Christ from the same Jews that hate Jesus Christ, and the whole New Testament tells us this page after page after page, that the Jewish establishment crucified Jesus Christ. They hated Jesus Christ because he violated Jewish law, because he also violated the laws. Jesus said that he came for all people, right? He wasn't for rebuilding the temple. In fact, he made fun of the temple. the one that's trying to rebuild with the red heifer or whatever they're trying to do right now. But that temple, he said, what are you talking about the temple so much? And he said many times in his own testimony and during his life that I am the temple. My body is your temple. Now, the belief in me and my Father, that's the temple. And he said, the truth is, I could destroy your old temple in a day. I could destroy the temple instantly if I wanted to.
And, yeah, and rebuild it in 3 days, which is when he came back.
Exactly. He said, and the New Testament writers, which Christians are supposed to believe in, said specifically, well, now, you know, once the crucifixion took place and he rose from the dead in 3 days, as he claimed he would, then they realized what he was alluring to. Yeah, he could destroy their temple and he could build it back in 3 days. Why 3 days? So that's it. You know, it's because he's the temple and he came back to life as the will of God. And Jews didn't like Jesus Christ because he didn't come as a racist, murdering genocider. He didn't came to kill all the Gentiles. He came to embrace the Gentiles. He came to embrace the Romans. In fact, the New Testament goes out of its way to show the innocence of Pontius Pilate, that it was the Jews who were demanding the crucifixion of Christ that caused it. And he tried his best to save the life of Jesus without endangering, you know, his country. It was pretty amazing. While the Jews were screaming for Christ's blood. And then it goes on, and the entire New Testament shows 450 verses that are viciously what anyone would call anti-Semitic by today's definitions, because it talks about, in fact, St. Paul says it the best way, who had that great on the road to Damascus reformation, you know, this change in his heart. And he says in there, but I'd be accursed because of my race, because he was a person of a Jewish faith early. But I'd be accursed because of my race, right? But thank God, you know. But the old prophets and we Christians are right, because this is exactly what he says. It's right there. It's in Hebrews. It's also in other places, numerous places. He says, but I'd be cursed because of my race. But the old prophets, and Jesus was right, in that the people who were my people are not now my people. And the people who were not my people are now the living true descendants, because it's not their blood that determines whether you're a Christian, but it's the children of the promise. It's so explicit in the Bible, all this. Jesus Christ is also quoted in the New Testament as saying, this is quoted by St. Paul, he said, just as I led them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, but they continue, this is Jesus Christ being quoted in your New Testament, folks, your sacred scripture. And it says, and Jesus says, just as I led them by the hand out of the land of Egypt, but they continued not in my covenant, and I consider them not, saith the Lord. So any Christian that gets up in pulpit, I'm sorry, or in church, and says God's got a special covenant with the Jews, and how somehow Jews are the chosen people of God, he's lying through his teeth. He's against the word of Jesus Christ. He's blaspheming the word of Jesus Christ. He's blaspheming the New Testament. He's blaspheming, you know, all these Christians who were crucified by these Jews since that time, suppressed. A great quote is from Thessalonians where it says, quote, and the Jews killed the prophets and crucified our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ, and drove us out and kept us from preaching to the Gentiles, though, that they may be saved, right? And he goes on, but thank God, God's wrath has finally come upon them at last, right? I mean, you can't get harder than that. And you can't get harder than the last quote I will use. If you can just memorize this for the rest of your life, you'll be doing pretty good. Christ is talking about freedom of speech, by the way. People often talk, what would be Christ's opinion on freedom of speech? What's going on with Google? What's going on with the censoring today, right? And Christ said it this way in John 8, chapter 8, he said, and ye shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Now, during this discussion, he got in a big fight with the Pharisees. The Pharisees are exactly like the Jewish elite of today. And they called him, Jesus Christ, a charlatan, that we're doing the work of the devil, he's an idolater, all these horrible things. And so, you know, Christ knew exactly what these Jews were then. And by the way, the reason he was crucified was just a few days earlier, before he was crucified, he went into the temple and he turned over the money changers, the Jewish money changers, usurious temple things, and it turned them over and whipped them, drove them out of the temple. I don't know what happened to you, my friend, if you went to Goldman Sachs, but I think you'd be sitting in jail for a long time. If they could have crucified Christ right then, they would have. They tried to do it through the Romans, but actually the Talmud says that they did it by themselves. But the point is that here's what Jesus Christ said. He said, ye and your fathers, and he's talking about your fathers, meaning your blood, what you are as Jews, ye and ye fathers. And this is specifically the Jews, because it even says, and the Jews answered him after he said this. He said, you and ye fathers are the sons of the devil. And the lusts of ye father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning. And he created the greatest crime in the history of the world, in the sense of it, a crime that God provided for, and Jesus turned into a blessing for humanity because he used that crime to forget all of our sins. It wasn't because the Jews were being just. They were full of the devil's bloodlust. That's how Christ can change, you know, lemons to lemonade. But anyway, so he said, ye and ye father are the sons of the devil. The lust of ye father he was to do. He's a murderer from the beginning. And that's what the Christians always talked about, the deicide, the killing of Jesus Christ. Of course, Christ overcame that with his resurrection as decreed by God. So that's what's really in the New Testament. And then Christ goes on to say, it was a murder from the beginning and abode not in truth because there's no truth in him. When you speaketh a lie, you speaketh of your very essence. And if you really look at Jews and what Judaism became without the influence of Christ. Christ came to give a complete completion of the law, to make sure people understood the law, to make sure you didn't want to be supremacist and murder everybody else and enslave the whole world. But the salvation was just as much as the Greeks and the Romans and all the non-Jews in the world as it was for anybody else. And that's what they didn't like. That's why they crucified Jesus Christ. And that's why they hate Christians, because they hate humanity. And that's what it says in the Corinthians that I quoted.
They despise the Holy Spirit because they're demonic. And the root of them is not the light.
First Corinthians, it says, quote, drove us out and despise all men. They despise all mankind. And they do. They claim all of us are anti-Semites and Nazis.
We are. Thanks, Goose. We'll get you back in, buddy.
They're the Nazi image that Hollywood has created of Nazis. They are the real Nazi racists.
Of course. Okay. All right, Jimmy from St. Louis, Missouri.
You got it. Hey, Dave Gary. How you doing? And Dr. Duke.
Hey, man.
All right. Hey, Dr. Duke, that was a good question, too, from Goose. But, you're a champion, man, on our cause, for the cause, and you're the leader. And got my vote anyway. But, you know, what if you go to the golden rule and you look at it as like, you know, we should do unto Jews as they do unto everybody else and treat them and the way they look at everybody else and all their Jew stuff. It's like, man, if we could just apply the golden rule to them, they'd be done, you know?
Oh, that's right.
But,
The golden rule, I mean, Christians believe in forgiveness, but at the same time, remember that the forgiveness that, and we're getting back to theology again, and this, and I know there are people listening to this program who are, you know, who are Viking pagans. I know there are people who are agnostics. There are people who are atheists. There are people who consider themselves communists. There are people who consider themselves all sorts of different things, Confucianists or whatever. But the point is, in terms of our Christian beliefs, it's pretty obvious that we are. And we are a people that believe that Christ's salvation was about a personal salvation. It was about the relationship between Jesus Christ and you and your family. And it was really about personal relationships more than anything. Because, you know, the biggest amount of bad things actually in the world are not even done for strangers except in wars. But wars are a good lesson, too. And Christ definitely was a peacemaker. He said, blessed be the peacemaker, thou shalt know the kingdom of God. So it's true that that Jesus was for justice. There's no question in my mind. But he was preaching a personal salvation about your eternal life and also about rules of living in a way that is going to help not only you, your community, your nation, your world. But it was starting with the idea of doing right by the people of your own. Start with your own mother and father. Honor their mother and father. A mother and father is taking care of their children. Unlike some of the other passages that Netanyahu was using to justify mass murdering the Palestinian children, including Palestinian children, who are Christians, by the way, and many Palestinians are children. In addition to that, Jesus Christ never advocated killing of any group involved. He certainly didn't advocate killing children, like the Jews are saying out loud and publicly right now in terms of Gaza. And that's why they say if you dare to just object to their massacre of the Palestinian innocent people of Palestine and Gaza, that's anti-Semitic. And that's exactly right. It is anti-Semitic because mass murder, genocide, has been in the Jewish history and the Jewish religion for thousands of years. And anybody that ever reads the Talmud, which is their halakha, their day-to-day living. The New Testament is in effect, I believe, what you could say was our halakha, not a halakha in the Jewish sense, because the Talmud's very different. The testimony of Jesus Christ, a spoken word, which is later written down, of Jesus Christ, was our guide for living, how to treat one another, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. Blessed are the peacemaker, you know, forgiveness, kindness, love, decency, morality, honor. What Jesus Christ said, truth, ye shall know the truth, and the truth will make you free. All these things are the way that you live personally, and the truth is that the biggest problem that white people have ever had has not really been from the fact when we were invaded, we stood up and fought, and we protected Europe. And when we had people trying to hurt us, we defended ourselves. If we had somebody that committed some sort of crime against our children, for instance, sodomizing children or murdering children, and Jews have done a lot of that as well as other sick whites, when that's done, there's nothing Christ said that said these people shouldn't be punished. Also, he said that, you know, if they realize they'd done wrong and they ask God for forgiveness, that they could still be forgiven. In the sense that anybody can be forgiven and start a new life. This is a great message for people. At the same time, it doesn't mean that you have to stand by and let people rape your children. And that's the kind of world we live in today, by the way.
All right. Thanks, Jimmy. We'll get you back in, buddy.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Jimmy? Yeah. Yep. I mean, actually, hold on, Jimmy. Okay. Dave, let me ask you a question while Jimmy's there.
Sure.
Because he asked this question, right? So let's say somebody went to church all their life and then they decided they didn't want to go to church and they wanted to follow the golden rule. And that's their rule. Treat others the way you would want to be treated, right? Can they do that without going to church? Without being a Christian?
Well, I think they can do it. I mean, I think there's a lot of moral people who don't necessarily believe in the salvation of Jesus Christ. And a lot of people... I saw an interesting film the other day by Scorbo, whatever his name, the guy that played Hercules in the movies. What's his name? I don't remember the actor's name. But they had this movie about the Antichrist coming, you know. And he was kind of a backsliding Christian. And he kind of stopped believing. And so when he started to believe again, and he thought the Antichrist was coming. And in fact, I was kind of surprised the Jews even showed the fact that this was being set up by Israel, just like Israel's doing all this evil right now. And they want to rebuild the temple. That's where the Antichrist is supposed to rule from. And, but when he was doing this, his daughter asked her, who later found her faith again too. Her mother had the faith. And his daughter asked him, he says, but father, you know, you didn't believe either. And the father said, no, he said, you know, I wanted to believe, but I just didn't believe. And later he said, God led me to the things that gave me the ability to see and believe, and I thank God for that. And he said, God doesn't necessarily make you believe anything. It's not like, look, I'm going to put a gun to your head. You either believe or you go to hell for all eternity. I don't believe that's really the message of God. I think what he does is that he opens a door to us. He opens a door for us to accept his faith, his culture, his values, his love, his personal love for us. And it's up to us, though, to accept that. So as a Christian, and again, I'm very tolerant of people who are not Christian. I believe that people have the right to believe anything they want to believe. I believe that people, you know, if I had a child or a relative or someone who is not a Christian, I would certainly share Christianity with them, open the door for them. But I wouldn't disown them or something because they, you know, and I would hold out hope that they would find this understanding before they pass from this earth. But, you know, it's like, and I think with the overriding message of Christ, and to answer your question directly, Dave, the overriding message of Christ was love and fairness and kindness and patience. And there's no doubt that Christ, according to his own words, his own ministry, that many of those that doubted, they later got rid of their doubts and they accepted Jesus Christ's salvation. And Christ and God was more than happy to have them in their fold of the kingdom of heaven. So I think that God is the ultimate patient person. At the same time, it makes sense, as Billy Graham used to say, you know, don't wait too long till it's too late. If you believe and you're taken a little bit by the Spirit, professing this belief and sharing this belief and having this belief in your heart, it's going to be something that's going to benefit your life, not hurt it. But at the same time, he's not asking us to be draconian and go torture people or kill people who don't have exactly the same beliefs that we have. And I don't think that's what Christ wanted or God wanted. He's certainly happy for people to come to their beliefs on their own. And also like the gentleman said in the movie, he says, you know, what the daughter said, you know, I realized that, God doesn't give us anything, but what he gives us an enormous gift because he opens the door for us, but we have to walk through the door. And, I like that kind of view as a Christian. So that's my answer to your question. I hope that helps some.
It helps. It's all good.
Yeah, thanks. Jimmy, that good? That good, Jimmy?
I think people will learn, you know, from
all right,
one buddy. Way or the other. But, hey, the only people that have that, they play that anti card, there's, you know, there's not really any agnostics, Satanists, Muslims, or Hindus, or anybody playing the anti card like the Jews do. You know, no. Anti-Semitism should be illegal to even call somebody that.
Well, you know,
yeah, right.
I was looking it up, you know, in the dictionary the other day, and this is an interesting point, which is a good point before the next question coming in. And I wanted to see how they control our language by basically controlling the dictionaries, right? So I looked up a few definitions, right? I looked up a word, Jewish supremacist. It says, the word you entered isn't in the dictionary. This is from Merriam-Webster, the biggest one we have in America, probably the most common dictionary used in the world. The word you entered is not in the dictionary. Check the spelling of the word, right?
By the way, it's owned by a Jew, Dave.
Well, there you go. Today it is, anyway.
Yeah. Yes.
So, okay. All right. There is a term, even though there's no term for Jewish supremacist and Jewish supremacy, there's a term for white supremacist. That's a person who believes that the white race is inherently superior to other races and that white people should have control over people of other races. Well, that's not exactly what, first of all, nobody calls himself a white supremacist. And but if you identify white supremacist as maybe the white race inherently superior to other races, Judaism is more white, you know, Jewish supremacist than white would be white supremacist, because no white person, or basically no intellectual anyway. Some people might say there may be difference in intellect or difference in certain physical kinds of performance or certain kinds of mental performance or whatever. There are differences between the races. Nobody denies that stuff. But at the same time, you know, no one believes that people are born inherently evil, right? That your souls are evil. But Judaism, in its very basic tenets, says that Jews are the people of God, the tissue of God, and it's even okay to steal a white person's liver, in other words, kill an innocent white person, which I've quoted that verse many times in many places, to kill a white person, steal his liver if he has to. And secondly, that white people should have control of other people of other races. For white people, it's a simply one. The truth is that white, so-called white supremacists, are not really white supremacists. They're simply white nationalists. They're simply white people that are not trying to suppress every individual not of their race in their society, not to hurt them or oppress them or harm them or enslave them or, you know, exploit them in any way. It doesn't mean that they want to enslave people or control people. It just means they want to preserve their particular heritage, their particular values. But this is how it works, right?
Heaven forbid. Dave, I'm going to take a top of the hour break. Dave, hold on. I'm going to take a top of the hour break.
But let me ask you one thing. Top of the
I'm going to get you back. Just hold on.
Okay. I'll be right back to you. I'm going to get some water.
Yeah. Okay, folks. It is, let's see, Central Time. And this is the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakforyouradio.com. And we have one more hour to go. And following this show is the brand new Ryan Massano show from 9 to 11 Eastern, live with your host, Ryan Massano. He's a good dude. So it's a good show. And he's going to take calls, I think, the second hour. So check it out. I think you'll like it. Okay, so let's see what we got here. Let's see if Dave is back. He is. All right, let's unmute him.
Jewish racism. Well, obviously, we see Jewish racism every day in Israel. We see Jewish racism in corporations where they put their own people in charge. They have a new position. They bring it. It's like musical chairs, but it seems like the musical chairs are always occupied by another Jew. They support their people. They have hundreds of organizations that fight for the interests of their people over all others and work for Jewish supremacy over all others. So Jewish racism is real. But if you type in Jewish supremacism, in quotation marks, and like, you know, white racism or white supremacy, it says, here's Merriam Dictionary, Jewish racism. The word you've entered isn't in the dictionary. Check a spelling suggestion and try again in the search bar. I mean, isn't that, I mean, that's so revealing. And I got a couple more for you just to give this another good example. Here's the word white supremacy. Now, the belief that the white race is inherently superior. You don't have to believe the white race is inherently superior to simply want to preserve your people or your heritage or your values or live in a society that's, you know, among your own people. Simple as that. It's not that you want to conquer the world. I'm totally against any sort of colonialism or any sort of domination or empire around the world. So white supremacism certainly doesn't define us. But let's look at one more definition here. Actually, two more definitions, right? All right. Look up anti-Gentile. Oh, the word you've entered, not in the dictionary. Anti-Goy, not in the dictionary, right? I mean, you can't make it up, can you? I mean, it's like, no. It's the Jews and the Jewish Encyclopedia and the Jewish Talmud say have whole sections called, and this is what it says from the Talmud, and this is what the Jewish Encyclopedia says, the biggest authoritative book on Jewish thinking and the Jewish religion and Jewish values. And it says a whole section on Gentiles. And it starts out saying, you know, the basic attitude of the Talmud was that only Jews are men. Now, that's the old way of patriarchically saying that only Jews are people. That's really what they're saying there. And so being, you know, that's pretty anti-Gentile, I would say. And that's definitely saying that Jews are inherently superior. And it's also definitely saying the Jews want control. And of course, they do want control. And they do have control. So all that's proven. And they are racist, by the way. Not only are they racist in their ideology, and they're just like Israel absolutely supports no non-Jewish immigration into the country. And that's defined fundamentally by race, by your genealogy, not by your religious view. You can be an atheist Jew, but you can come to Israel and get married to a religious Jew all you want, no problem. It's only thing that's important is that you've got a Jewish mother, you've got Jewish blood, and if you're a part of the right. Jewish elite like the Kohanim, you have to have so-called pure Jewish blood, even though it's actually impossible. That's a mythos. But that's the kind of weird things in Judaism that they have. I mean, even their suggestion that somehow Kohanim are just pure Jews is ridiculous. They are the most genetic related people on earth. They're like literally fifth cousins. And that is very, very rare. The average person on the street you might meet or in the world, that chance might be 1 in 200. A random person would be a fifth cousin to you. But Jews, almost all Jews are fifth cousins to other Jews, to most all other Jews. And that's pretty Dave, amazing. Yeah.
That is. So it's probably not a surprise because, like I said, the guy who owns Encyclopedia Britannica, which owns Merriam-Webster, is Jacob Safra, a Switzerland-based financier. Amazing, right? Uh-huh. And his father was also Jacob. He passed in 63. Uh-huh. And it was a merchant Jewish family from Aleppo, I guess that's Syria, which historically made its money from financing the caravans of the Middle East. And this guy has a square in Jerusalem named after him and his wife called Safra Square. Isn't that very nice? So this is a big Jew, so it's no surprise, right? Jimmy, thank you, buddy. We'll get you back in.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, that was interesting. All right, man. All right.
Cool. All right. All right, Dave, let's get in our buddy, my cousin Vinny from Indiana.
Hello, David and David. Hey, I want to bring up a conversation I had with Mark Dankoff and Patrick Slattery on Friday. Mm-hmm. Mark Dankoff was talking about there's a congressional election in the primary. Indiana's 8th district, which is the southwest corner of Indiana, it runs from Terre Haute to Evansville, includes Vincennes. John Hostetler is coming out of retirement. John Hostetler was a congressman for like 8 years in the late 90s to the mid-aughts. He was one of the very few Republicans who would vote against military aid for Israel and other packages. He wrote a book in 2006 called The Iraq War, Who Got Nothing for the Nation, Who Got What Out of the Iraq War. And he's now running. If you look up his video, he sounds just like Douglas McGregor was running for Congress. He's a really good man, really strong on immigration. He ran for the Senate in 2010. AIPAC and all of them went absolutely nuts. They brought Dan Coats out of retirement, gave him a boatload of money, and he beat Hostetler for the Senate. But it's really Hostetler has a really good chance. His son is a very popular Indiana legislator. And just this week, Max Blumenthal called this the most important primary in the country because AIPAC has announced that they're going to give, they're going to spend $500,000 in attack ads against him. And the Republican Jewish Coalition is going to spend another $1 million. So if this guy, he was a very popular congressman. If he could get in, it would really shake things up. And I wish that you would take some notice and look into this and talk to Mark Bancroft.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I'm definitely in favor of that guy. No question about it. And I know a lot about him. I was around in those years when he was running, and he was trying to do the good work. So there you go.
Yeah, I really, you know, you talk about how at a fraction of 1%, Jews corrupt democracy. And there's also an article on the UNS Review by a man named Thomas Dalton. He's a British academic. He was on with Mark Collette and Patrick Slattery a couple years ago. And he says that at 0.1%, given modern finance and usury, Jews basically corrupt any democracy. And it was like, I thought that sounds just like David Duke, because you mentioned how, you know, Jews are 0.1% of the population of Ukraine, and they've completely destroyed the country.
Oh, yeah. They definitely have.
And if you look at...
Yeah, go ahead.
It's even worse because, like, I know someone who's married to a man from Iceland, and Iceland had zero Jews. And in 2008, the country got in, Iceland got in problems with the financial meltdown, and they pushed back against Jewish usury. And then they passed laws forbidding circumcision. Then Jewish finance attacked Iceland. They made them sign into the EU to get, you know, to sell their exports or fishing exports. And now they're pushing refugees on Iceland. Iceland's a tiny country. And just a month ago, they had these refugees causing all sorts of mayhem in the Icelandic parliament. I mean, they don't stop until they crush you.
That's all true.
Exactly.
Well, they never stop. They don't know how to stop.
Yeah. No, well, please look into the Hostetler issue.
Vinny, can you send a link? Vinny, can you send a link in the chat there about this guy so we can see who it is?
I'm outside right now, but I'll try to send you something.
Well, get back inside, for God's sakes. We need to save the country.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I'll see you. Bye. Okay, Dave, we got our good friend from Yuma, Arizona. Yuma, Arizona. Robert.
All right. Dr. Duke,
yes.
A lot of Christians criticize the Quran because it says they can marry 8-year-old girls. Is it true that the Old Testament says this exact same thing?
Yeah, it is true. It is true that child betrothing, not necessarily coition, was certainly practiced by a lot of the people of the Judeans and Jews. There's no question about that. That at least it seems to be obvious anyway from the historical data. Now again, like I'm saying to you, and I know it's almost like a heresy for me to say this for some Christians, but remember, almost all Christians of every different denomination, and whatever you might say, every species of Christianity or every breed of Christianity has a few things that we're not going to necessarily agree on. But I think it's very important to take the spirit of God from the biblical texts and not some specific single quote or and whatever. And I think you can find quotes that are like a good example. The anti-Jewish quotes are overwhelming in the New Testament. It's not like I'm picking out one word of Jesus Christ or one word of Paul. These things are repeated again and again and again and again and again. And the Jewish racism I talk about is at the very epitome of what Jewish power is. I'll give an example. I was reading about this morning, and I just pulled it up because I anticipated this question when we got on the subject today, right? So there was in 1965, I learned about this, and that was just about 65 or 66 or 67 when I heard this, that when I started learning about these Jewish values. So this one Jew who later wrote a little bit when I was older, but he also wrote about a book in 1921 that was done in the German language called Crisis and Entscheidung, Crisis and Decision. And this Klatschen writes this. Listen to this, folks. This is the heart of the Jewish attitude toward us. Quote, "We are not hyphenated Jews. We are Jews with no qualifications or reservations. We are simply aliens. We are foreign people in your midst. And we emphasize, we wish to stay that way. There's a wide gap between you and us, so wide that no bridge can be held across. Your spirit is alien to us," talking about Christians and white people. "Your myths, legends, habits, customs, traditions, and national heritage, your religious and national shrines of Christianity, your Sundays and holidays, they're all alien to us. The history of your triumphs and defeats, your war songs and battle hymns, your heroes and their mighty deeds, your national ambitions and aspirations, they are all alien to us. The boundaries of your lands cannot restrict our movements, and your border clashes are not of our concern. Far over and above the frontiers and boundaries of your land stand our Jewish unity. Whosoever calls the foreign Gentile land a fatherland is a traitor." That's the Jew who calls him that. To the Jewish people, "a loyal Jew can never be other than a Jewish patriot. We recognize the national unity of diaspora Jews, no matter in which country they may reside. Therefore, no boundaries can restrain us pursuing our own Jewish policy." And that's all. The same thing's true of Noam Goldman, whose son was the Goldman that helped influence the founding of the World Economic Forum. And he was the head of the World Zionist Organization. And he wrote, quote, "Judaism can have nothing in common with Germanism." This was, of course, during the time that Germany existed, or Germany dedicated to actual Germans. "If we go by the standards of race, history, and culture, and the Germans do have the right to prevent the Jews from intruding on the affairs of their folk, the same demand I raise for the Jewish folk as against the German. The Jews are divided into two subcategories: those who admit that they belong to a race distinguished by a history thousands of years old, and those who don't. The latter are open to a charge of dishonesty." How's that for the quote for today? What do you think?
That was a long quote.
It's a good one, though, right?
I think so. There's a lot of interesting things that it said there, yeah.
Yeah.
Thanks, Robert. We'll get you back in, buddy.
Thank you. Bye.
All right. Dave, we got Michael from California.
Okay.
Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, hello, Dr. Duke.
Yes, sir.
So one thing that Jesus railed against is me as a Christian, sodomites. We don't tolerate that.
Right.
We don't tolerate homosexuality. We don't tolerate transgenderism. None of this. We don't tolerate any of this. Abortion, we don't tolerate abortion. These are all Jewish all Jewish. And so as a Christian man, heterosexual, I oppose all those evil things that they have brought to our country.
All right.
And that's my little rant.
Yep. And again,
do Jews have abortions, Michael?
I don't know.
Well, they do, but you know what? They restrict. Well, I know all about this because I can show you hundreds and hundreds of Jewish papers, both in America, Canada, and Europe, where Jews are boasting that they led the pro-abortion movement in these Western countries, right? But guess what? Israel is not considered a pro-abortion nation. That's by the listing of the pro-abortion groups, even though Jews around the world have led the effort for abortion. And in Israel, they make it quite difficult and embarrassing for any Jewish woman to get an abortion. Because what they make them do, they make them go to these big hospitals, and they have this board of these Jews sitting on the board. And the Jews don't want abortions for Jewish women. It's not that they're totally forbidden to have that. They would want an abortion, though, for any Jew that has sexual relations with a Gentile or a Palestinian, for sure. But they make it very difficult anyway. So what they do is they make them come up before this board, mostly a bunch of old guys, and they ask them, you know, why do you want an abortion? What's the purpose for the abortion? Blah, 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 blah. And so they make it so uncomfortable, so embarrassing, and so much trouble that they don't. And they have much, much fewer abortions there than they do in America. Now, at the same time, their immorality is not any less by any means, and even homosexuality. There's a lot of Jews who understand that the Bible, in both Old Testament and New Testament, is very, very anti-sodomite. And anti-sodomy is very clear. I mean, there was a lesson why Sodom and Gomorrah, that's where we get the name, right, was destroyed by God. But the interesting thing is that these Jews have national, international gay celebrations there. And a lot of these Jews who commit pedophilic crimes all over the world, they have found refuge by the Jewish state. So when they're molesting children in other countries, they run to Israel. And they've had headlines in the Jewish press in Israel and in the Western press. And some of the headlines read like this. Israel, promised land for pedophiles. And about how Jewish pedophiles committing crimes against children, many times of the same sex, that these people get shelter in the state of Israel. So Israel has these massive gay rights meetings. When they have these homosexuals around the world, they take their money. They love the degeneracy, and they don't mind a Jew being degenerate a day or two. But what they don't want is a destruction of the institution of marriage among Jews. And Jews in Israel have the highest, by far, the highest birth rate of any so-called Western country. And, of course, it's not a Western country. They have massive high birth rate in Israel because everything that they do in the state encourages Jews to have more children. Everything they do in the Western world encourages us not to have more children. So, you know, for instance, the courts in Israel, if a homosexual partner in a marriage, a man or woman, if they go totally homosexual, I mean, if they have something on the side, they're not going to worry about it or something. But if they go homosexual and they get divorced, they literally do not let the children even visit the homes of the new homosexual couple because they think that's a bad influence on the children's normality and decency. So Jews who presented this and promoted this all their movies, all the propaganda, just like they promote porn, they make it very difficult in Israel, for instance, for a Jew to sign up and look at even a porn site. They make them publicly register if they want to go to a porn site. This is all fact. And so they've got to publicly register their name to go to a porn site, which is obviously a big restraint upon the Jews to go and get infected by this sick Jewish pornography because they don't want the Jewish pornography, which is 90% created by Jews in this world.
I would outlaw it. I would outlaw pornography. That
well,
would be
of course.
One. I would outlaw all these things that they've introduced.
Well, we used to. Every Western state at one time, as soon as it was possible for the technology to have that kind of sick pornography, every Western state outlawed it.
We had sodomy laws. Didn't we have sodomy laws when you were a kid?
Of course we did.
Yeah,
you got a prison for being caught doing sodomy.
Yeah,
and a lot of civil rights workers.
Thank you, Dr. Duke. Thank you, Mr. Gahari.
Thanks, Michael. We'll get you back in, buddy.
You got it.
Okay, Dave, let's bring in Richard. He's got another question. Go ahead, my good man.
Hello. Thank you very much. Well, I mean, my question really comes, thanks for getting back on, Dave. And
sure.
I just wanted to ask, like, do you think that there will be a negotiated settlement in both Gaza and also Ukraine, either this year or in the coming months? To what extent do you think that there may be an escalation? Like friends of mine said that I think there was a embassy that was attacked in Damascus, I believe. And there's currently a lot of talk that there's going to be a response from Iran on Israel in the coming days. So I just wanted to make that my thought, my final question. I know there's other people want to get in. But, yeah, your thoughts on that, please, David.
Well, I think I think one thing we make a mistake on, and Dr. Slattery talks a lot about this as well. You can listen to my show this week. I'm sure I'll be discussing that with him some and with all the people listening out there, that we tend to think that Jews are all of one mind, that they're all totally organized or on the same page for every subject. I think there's real debate and real argument about Jews and what's best for the Jews. Dr. Slattery puts it this way, and I think it was very prophetic the way he says this. He said there's a battle between the crazy Jews, right, and the clever Jews. And a lot of the more clever Jews, the smarter Jews, the more controlled Jews, not the ones that are just totally wacko, they realize that they have power over the world in so many ways. They control Hollywood. They control Wikipedia. They control Google. They control Facebook. They are able to massively censor the news. They're able to control so much of our educational networks. And they've orchestrated a policy to outnumber us in our own country. That's why this idea, this crazy idea that somehow, oh, it's white supremacy and all that that's doing this to Gaza. No. It's not white supremacy. It's not white people at all. And in fact, the Jews are trying to destroy white people as ardently as they are trying to destroy Palestinians in their particular case. I mean, we know that to be a fact. They have been the ones that have orchestrated this great replacement theory and the replacement of white people in the European world. That's just the fact of the matter. And the wars that have been so dysgenic and so damaging to all of us. So the thing that we've got to keep in mind is that there's a lot of Jews saying, you know, that we shouldn't be doing this genocide right now in Gaza. Not necessarily because they don't like the outcome, but it's because they realize that it's laying bare this ugly face of what Judaism really is and what Jewish racism really is. And what's happening right now, it's a very short step from realizing that Israel and these Jews who run Israel are committing mass genocide, and they're lying about it with their media. It's because they control the media that they get away with these things. So they're afraid that this is going to cause anti-Jewish recognition, anti-Jewish understanding, and that's liable to cause their overthrow in the Western world and elsewhere around the world to lessen the impact they have over the Jewish-controlled America. And that's true. But I think there's some of them thinking that they can go to any length. I mean, they've had massive wars before and successfully conducted these wars and killed millions of people and made people think that they were doing the right side of these wars. And I think they're thinking the same thing. If there is an incident and Iran strikes and then it escalates and they hit an American carrier or an American ship, or a lot of American lives die, it's going to be immediately seen and by the media will be like, oh, it's like ISIS, right? Or Iran's like ISIS or Hezbollah's like ISIS. It's not. The truth is, it's American weapons, it's American guns that are doing what they're doing to Palestinians. It's doing what they did. They caused 500,000 Syrians to die in these horrible wars that they created in the rise of ISIS. They did the same thing with the rise of Al-Qaeda, which also caused a lot of death and destruction in Europe and around the world. And they did the same thing with this Iraq war. And they did the same thing with Ukraine, where they've killed the flower of Ukrainian youth, the white young kids of Ukraine who are being murdered by this Jewish government in a war that's not benefiting Europe or Ukraine or anybody except for the Jews who want this war. So there is a difference. I think there's a lot of crazy Jews, and I don't know yet who's going to come out on top here. Netanyahu may be desperate to keep his position, and he knows the more radical that the situation becomes and the more warlike it becomes, the more, I think, because when Jews have to choose a side on these major subjects of a massive war, say between Israel and Iran, or Israel, Hamas and Iran, and then if the United States will get into it, because they would certainly want and demand America get into it, once that happens, God save us, because I think there'll be huge casualties. And they will just use those wars to demonize the other people. But the truth is, you know, Matt Albright said it in 60 Minutes, as we've all heard this a lot of times. I've played it in this show. You've played it for us too, Dave. You know, 500,000 babies died because of our sanctions. Madeleine Albright, our Jewish Secretary of State, says, oh, we think that's worth
it.
That's
I'll play fine. It right Seriously. Now. Here, it's only a few seconds. Hold on.
Go ahead, play it.
I'll play it right now. Here we go. Ready?
We have heard that 500,000 children have died. I mean, that's more children than died in Hiroshima. And you know, is the price worth it?
I think this is a very hard choice, but we think the price is worth it.
I'm ashamed of that horrific Jewish troll. This
beast.
This mass murderer.
Beast. Jew beast.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And here's the thing. As an American, I'm more angry about that than I think I would be even as a person who lives in Iraq. Because I'm telling you, this is a stain upon our country. And we didn't vote for this. This is not what we voted for. This is not what we believe in as Americans. This is not part of our real Christian values. These are the values of these radical Jews. It's exactly the kind of, remember that quote I gave you earlier in the show, quote, ye and ye father, sons of the devil, the lust of ye father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning. Any Jew like Madeleine Albright or any of these other Jews that run our foreign policy and run our media and run our politics and hide these Jewish crimes, even the First and Second World War, massive murders of European peoples in those wars. Anybody that would do that, right, is exactly what Christ is talking about, a murderer. And they are murderers. And not only do they murder, but they lie. And there's something that's often talked about biblically and talked about by the New Testament as well. One of the commandments we have is not to bear false witness against thy neighbor. And they bear false witness against us every day. And this false witness is done for a purpose of genociding more of us. The reason they made up these lies about the beheading of babies and not talk about the fact that only 36 Jewish children died while they killed 13,000 Palestinian little babies, is because they want to demonize the Palestinians to justify their genocide. And that's the reality of the world today, folks. And if we can't face up to that, the reason we're saying this isn't because we hate Jews or we're motivated by any sort of hate or anything. We're motivated by justice. We're motivated because we don't want to see children of any race die. And numbers. We don't want to see this kind of crap. We don't want to see these massive wars. And we've had regime of regime of regime in America where Jews, who are only 2% of the population, have completely controlled campaign fundraising, has controlled the media selection of candidates, and has had the most powerful lobbies. And it's not just AIPAC. AIPAC is just the tip of the iceberg, because AIPAC simply lines up the Jewish billionaires, and a single Jewish billionaire by himself, like Sheldon Adelson gave to Donald Trump, can give more to a particular candidate or to someone like Joe Biden. 8 of 9 of the biggest contributors to Joe Biden, right? 18 out of 20 of the biggest contributors to Hillary Clinton were Jews. And a single billionaire can give more money to even just one candidate than all the lobbies of the Congress combined together into one. Just one billionaire. All that AIPAC is, and it's not the biggest lobby, but it tells the billionaires where to create their PACs to and how to go vote for or to support candidates and to go against candidates they hate. That's the truth, folks, and I stand by it.
Thank you very much for that.
Thank you, Richard. We'll get you back in, buddy. Dave, I got a question for you.
Sure.
How about that? Okay, tomorrow is Monday. It's April 8th, at least here. In other parts of the world, it's already there. But we got this eclipse coming, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 2024 solar eclipse will be the most watched solar eclipse in history due to the many large cities it'll pass through. Also, it'll be the last total solar eclipse across the United States for 20 years. Why do you think it's causing a lot of anxiety? Have you paid attention to this at all?
Well, I think the world's anxious about a lot of things. I mean, you look at the Ukraine war, the Jewish war, and you look what happened before that, the Iraq war, and all these other wars. Look at the destruction in Syria. Look at the war that we facilitated, the Jews of our country, I should say, facilitated between Iraq and Iran, which killed millions of Iranians and Iraqis. Look at the Second World War and the First World War, which were wars fought over very small little things. It was about a small piece of territory where Germans were literally kidnapped by the New World Order, so to speak, away from their own country and held in bondage by a country that hated Germans and did programs against them and repressions against them. And because the Germans demanded that to happen, the war was fought over that. We had a world war, which killed 70 million people, anywhere between 55 and 80 million people. But the point is that, there's a lot of anxiousness now, and a lot. And this also, the whole thing, too, the Arabs are very familiar with the fact that the Dome of the Rock is built right where the old Jewish temple, which was torn down by the Romans. And these Jewish prophets say, and there are some prophecies in the New Testament, that this is going to be the seat of the Antichrist, and that a Jew is going to rise. Jews are going to rebuild the temple. A Jewish Antichrist will come and completely conquer the world and will kill most of the people on the planet. Now, I, as a Christian, look at this a little different than some of the evangelicals. First off, I know that this prophecy that the Antichrist will come, and when the Antichrist comes, that Jesus Christ will come to save us in the end. I believe that all prophecies are always conditional prophecies, just like covenants of God are conditional. Just like the covenant they often say that God made with Jews, that they'd always stand by the Jews to the 1,000th generation or whatever. But it doesn't say that. It says the 1,000th generation, but then it says, but that is conditional. This is a conditional covenant. That's what it says in Deuteronomy. It's conditional on whether or not the Jews keep the laws of God. and obey the word of God and the will of God. And of course, crucifying his son doesn't kind of disqualify them from having any covenant. And so that's exactly what Jesus Christ said, right? So it's like when you look at these things, I think what there's talked about in Revelation is a warning to us, because repeatedly in the New Testament, repeated in the ministry of Christ, said, if you need something from me, I'm always there. I'm your heavenly father. Your heavenly father loves you as I love you. And I'm there for you. I'm there for the things that you need in your life. I'm here for love. I'm here for beauty. I'm here for faith. I'm here for morality. I'm here to protect the decent people. And the truth is that the idea that an Antichrist would come and kill billions of people, including billions of children. You want to talk about pedophilia? My God, sodomy, my God. The Antichrist comes in, you know, there'll be millions of children, millions of this innocent children that will suffer torturous, horrific deaths and slavery and degradation and all those things. We know that. And the fact that some Christians would say that, oh, we gotta root for the Antichrist. We gotta hope the Antichrist will come and win and rebuild the temple, because then Jesus will come. Hello? Are these people effing insane? Have they absolutely lost their mind? So we're supposed to support the enemies of Christ? A man that's going to murder millions of innocent people, including Christians and their children? It's unbelievable. I don't think so. And I think that really depends on how godly we are. I think it depends on whether or not, and I think if we beseech our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, you know, I don't think Jesus Christ has to have the Antichrist come and kill a few billion people and innocent people. Billions and billions of people have that kind of suffering, human suffering. I think God really looks at us like his children, all the people of the world, including our European brethren as well. And I think that, you know, that Jesus does not have to have the Antichrist, that God has the power over the Antichrist. And if God wills it, if God hears us and we're true to God, I believe that he'll stop the Antichrist long before he kills one innocent life. Because I think that Christ will hear our words. Does that make any sense? And I think this whole
idea. Yeah, of course. I'm going to read an article here on the eclipse.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Doctors warn April 8th solar eclipse can cause anxiety. Millions will gather outside to watch the solar eclipse. But a doctor, I wonder if he's a Jewish doctor, we'll find out, says the event can cause issues with a person's amygdala. So an amygdala is an almond-shaped structure that lies in the temporal lobe, lying just beneath the uncus. It's a diverse and complex in structure, comprises approximately 13 nuclei. Let's find a little bit more about it. It's a quick article. The April 8th solar eclipse should be a joyous wonder for many, but a doctor is warning that the event can cause anxiety among some. There are multiple reasons eclipses can cause anxiety. Dr. Susan Albers, A-L-B-E-R-S, psychologist for the Cleveland Clinic, said, our brains have a built-in alarm system called the amygdala, and when there is anything out of the ordinary in our environment, it clicks into hyperdrive and becomes aware of everything that is going on and triggers a fight or flight response, which may make you feel a little nervous, said Albers. The other issue is that many will gather in crowded areas to view the solar eclipse. For some, large crowds can cause anxiety. Albers recommended that people take deep breaths if feeling anxious. She also recommended trying to find a safe, comfortable spot to watch the eclipse to avoid anxiety. There are many people who are going to be in group environments, and this can often trigger a lot of anxiety or increase the emotional response, said Albers. So be prepared if you're in a large group of people that there could be a heightened sense of emotion. Those who have chased eclipses describe how out of this world the experience can be. Anyway, a bunch of guys talk. Who cares? Anyway, yeah, I guess it's that amygdala, right? The amygdala?
Yeah, amygdala. That's the right word for it. And let me tell you one of the problems you have about this eclipse. It's going to be a complete eclipse in the along from San Antonio, I think, all the way up into New England, along that line there. And then places like New Orleans, you're going to have a partial eclipse here, like you're going to see. And so that's one of the problems with it is, and if you're watching this thing, if you have a complete and total eclipse and you look at the sun and the moon is, you know, blocking its view, you can see that pretty well. But if once that sun is shining through there and you're looking directly into the sun, you can certainly cause damage. So the amygdala is a really interesting part of the brain's organelles, organ system. I mean, it's actually an alarm, kind of like an alarm bell in the brain. It's associated with emotional reactions, right? Fear, aggression. It also resurrects kind of memories that you have, like you have memories of your parents' death or your death of a spouse or child or a terrible accident or trauma in your life. It has a way to dredge those up. What else do I know about it? What's the deal about it is that because the light shines so hard, and light, by the way, can heal or it can harm. And I do believe in sunshine. I think that sunshine is an important light, and we evolved in light. And I believe one reason that we have a lot of the mental problems we do, we know there's a lot of science that shows that people that get outside, the more you get outside and the more you get out into the sunlight during the day, the healthier you are. And by the way, there is actually an inverse relationship between the sun being sun a lot and skin cancer. Because being in the sun a lot causes a lot of vitamin D3. In fact, construction workers that are outside all the time and often without the shirts in the summer, all summer long, right? They have less skin cancer than office workers do, where they're just getting the indirect light and the artificial light and not the healthy light of the skin. I mean, the healthy light of the sun. And remember that the sun, the visible part of the sun's rays is only about 40% of the sun. The invisible parts are what we call the near and far infrared, which we don't even see the light waves. But those waves penetrate our bodies. They penetrate our brain. And they make our mitochondria healthy. They make our body healthy. And they're needed. So, by the way, the amygdala is... Yeah, what can I say about the amygdala?
Look, we have all this stuff in our bodies we don't even know about.
It's part of the limb.
It's amazing.
Well, we know a lot about the amygdala now. We didn't know about it much 100 years ago, but even old scientists believe that this part of the brain in autopsies and so forth, they would even the Greeks knew that they seemed to see some sort of relation with this because they even did some brain surgeries even 2,000 years ago, believe it or not. And they would sometimes take out parts of the brain. They understood what cancers were. And sometimes they excise cancers and so forth. So they know when people were kind of going crazy and emotionally crazy. I've read this, and I don't know if it's true or not, that if they take out the amygdala, which can be taken out carefully from the side of the brain, it's really sitting really like at the base of the brain. So it's not like up in the... It's not right in the middle of the basal ganglia. It's not like in the base of your great aspects of your tissue. You know, it's really one small. It's about the size of a peanut with a shell, I guess. And it's definitely part of the limbic system. Now the limbic system is interesting because the whole idea of these reptilian creatures that have ruled the earth and which is done by the British guy.
David Icke.
Yeah, David Icke, which I don't believe in that theory. But it basically, a lot of people say that Jewish character is a lot like, they say it's a lot like the reptilian kind of the brain. And then they'll tip it. You know, there's a lot of connotation in the Bible, a lot of connotation in other writing, how serpents, you're sly, they sneak up on you. You know, they'll go through the snakes in the grass, right? They'll bite you from behind. They'll get you down. When they bite you, they poison you. It's pretty treacherous. Same way we kind of look at spiders, you know, like they inject poison in us. In some ways, it's been an analogy people have used about Jews for a long time, that they bite, you know, they inject poison. I thought you'd enjoy that.
It's true. Dave, let me tell you about this before we – yeah.
One more thing. Dracula, for instance, is another good example of that. Bram Stoker – I was talking about this on my show on Friday with Mark. Bram Stoker was a famous British writer who wrote about Dracula, who was a Romanian who fought, and he was a victorious person against the Turkish invaders. He was actually a hero for his country, but he's also known as Vlad the Impaler. But he took that story and he made a fictional novel out of it called Dracula. And it was all about this guy that you know, with the dark arts, right? He would suck the blood of people. He would bite people. They'd become his servants, his slaves, basically. He also would – there's only two things that could stop Dracula. It was the sun, and this is interesting, sunshine and light. Light destroys Dracula, right, which is the truth. So people – this was actually – many people that read Bram Stoker's work said this is what they called a crypto anti-Semitic book. Isn't that interesting? Because – it's like the characters of Jew. What's the only thing that stops the Jew is Christian, you know, Christian strength, power, awakeness, aliveness, and truth, and light, and education. You know, and light, when it, you know, truth exposes the Jews and weakens the Jews. So the whole thing and the idea that, you know, that while we sleep, he goes out, the whole idea about, you know, putting people under his spell. He looked like how many leaders has Dracula, or has the Jewish Dracula, so to speak, put under their spell with the biting they have out of the corruption. That's exactly what Epstein was doing, right, in terms of a lot of these Gentiles.
Dave, let's go to the eclipse, and then we're going to get a couple
go ahead,
calls in.
More eclipse.
Okay, it starts tomorrow. It starts tomorrow
Alaska
in Dallas,
flood.
Texas.
Alaska flood.
The partial begins at 12:23 p.m. Of course, that's our time zone, Central. And the partial ends at 3:02 p.m. So it goes for like 2.5 hours. Then it hits Itabel, Oklahoma, Little Rock, Arkansas, Poplar Bluff, Missouri, Paducah, Kentucky, Carbondale, Illinois, which I've read about Carbondale over the years. They seem to get a lot of eclipses. Evansville, Indiana, Cleveland, Ohio, Erie, Pennsylvania, Buffalo, New York, Burlington, Vermont, Lancaster, New Hampshire, and finally Caribou, Maine. So that partial begins 2 hours after Dallas's partial, and it ends an hour and 38 minutes after Dallas's partial ends. So the whole thing goes from 12:23 p.m. Central Time till, and I'll do it in Central, till 3:40 p.m. Central Time. So about 4 hours, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool stuff. All right. It's funny. I just got a text from my son's high school saying that with the partial eclipse occurring tomorrow, it is not safe to look directly at the sun at any time without specialized eye protection for solar viewing, just as we would never stare at the sun during a normal day. It is not to be done during a partial eclipse either.
Wow.
So, yeah, this thing is
Well, let me tell you something that's weird about
people.
This, too.
Yeah.
I'm not saying there's going to be all these events. I mean, there's always been prophets that the world's going to end next week or whatever, or a few months from now, a few weeks. They've been saying a lot of things about this, and people are wondering. And there's all this rumblings about war, both in Europe, you know, both in the Middle East, Hezbollah, you know, Iran, all this other stuff going on, the Houthis, and but you know, it's really interesting. But the interesting thing when you talked about I wasn't even thinking about this before, but I do remember about this organ, amygdala, that is absolutely associated with both positive and negative emotions. And they usually use this organ, or this organ is mostly just like fear is a much more powerful emotion than love, right? If you know, like Stalin used to say, you know, it's much better if they, it's okay. It's great for them to love you, but you know, but people screw over somebody they love, but they won't screw over somebody they fear. And so there's been a lot of association over the years of people who study the amygdala and the effect of stimulation of the amygdala in terms of association of the amygdala's reaction to emotions that you're experiencing. So they often say that the amygdala is something that affects whether we see something as good or bad. And the reason why it does that, because it responds to fear more. So if you're affected in the amygdala, for instance, something like an eclipse or something like some sort of a bright, you know, blinding light or a big stimulation.
Or like Larry Silverstein, something, you know, like that.
Something like that. You know, you know, Jeffrey Epstein.
Right.
So if you do that, then, you know, it's more likely to trigger bad feelings. And there's always been, seems to be historically, I don't know if this is true or not, but there seems to be historically an association between eclipses and subsequent wars. So there you go. Maybe some people
that's interesting. Yeah. Who knows? There's so many things we don't know, right? I mean, that are happening all around us. And we have no clue how they're interacting. Dave, why don't you, because we're coming on the close of the show, why don't you let the listeners know where they can hear you, where they can help you out, and like your schedule of shows throughout the week?
Sure. Okay. Well, I'm on the Rinse Radio Network every day. And you can easily find me at rinseradio.com or rinse.com. And you can also, you can find, there's a phone number, actually, you can call. You can listen to it on your cell phone. Most of you have cell plans that give you free calling anywhere in America. And you can call the program number, and you can listen to the show right on your cell phone, whatever cell phone you have. And if you're in Europe, you can listen to it through the program. Just go to rinse.com. And you have on links there on any sort of internet connection, and you can listen to the show live. Also, we have a great archive on the network, so you can hear the show by date anytime you want. So you can listen to Friday's show was really great with Mark Collett on Friday, and a great show with, I think, Slattery on Thursday, or I did a solo show then. And I thought those were two of our better shows. And you can definitely get that as well. So just go to, if you want to find an easy way to find that, go to davidduke.com and then go to Rate My Radio Show, the subtitle for the radio shows. And then you'll see a link to the archives for the radio show. The archive link is H for human rights, HR, and then radio, just no spaces, H. R, so human rights radio, RADIO.net. Easy one to find, easy one to put in. You can put it in your browser. And anytime you want to put that in, it's going to give you a entire listing for days and weeks and months. And you can go back whatever date you want to and listen to those shows. And I think you'll enjoy that. Now you can donate to us by box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. I think you still have some Jewish supremacism left. I also have Jewish supremacism.
Yes, a few of them. Yes.
So if those you want to get some of those, you can buy it through Dave Gahari or through us down here, either way. And we support all of you, and we hope and we appreciate all of you. And I'm so thankful for your support for me over these years.
But they still won't let you on Twitter, right?
Nope. No, because I tell the truth about the one subject.
I guess you.
Well, see, which is proof of the fact that's the most important subject. If the most important thing is what they most are anxious to suppress the truth about Jewish power. If that's the truth, which is obviously the truth, it's overwhelmingly true. If that's true, then it just shows why that's the most important thing we should be talking about.
Exactly. You mean imaginary Jewish power?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Unbelievable.
Any last thoughts for today?
Dave, it's just always great to be with you on Sunday nights on the Dave and Duke Call-In Show on speakforyouradio.com. And I would just say that, you know, folks can go to our archives on speakforyouradio.com and listen from the beginning if you want. And as soon as we end, the Ryan Massano Show is going to start. And that's 2 hours. And I think you'll like that guy. Give him a listen. And Dave, are we doing any after show show?
I don't think we're going to do some tonight. I got to rest. I've got some health issues going on. I might talk to people about that eventually. But, you know, my life, as you know, Dave, I've had a lot of stress in my life. When you fight these powerful forces, and it takes a superhuman effort to do it. I remember running for office when I ran for the U.S. Senate and governor and then the presidential campaign. It was like, for 3 years straight, I didn't hardly sleep at all, you know? It was, like, unbelievable.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know how you did it.
But it's just like, and we're out, we've always had the trouble, and in prison, eating that bad prison food and having those kind of conditions
and
as well.
And having to worry about them jumping
and all the time. I wasn't really worried about it. I was able to control my mentality. But still, it's stressful, and it's... And more than that, it's all these, when you're in prison, all the toxins. So I have some health issues that I think have come out of that. And I've always tried to, you know, eat right, try to sleep as best I can since that time. I mean, but when you're doing this job, you end up putting the job first so many, many times where maybe I should have put my health first.
We need you, Dave. I'm bringing in some of your fans to say goodnight to you and tell you they love you. Go ahead, guys.
Thanks.
Jimmy, Nick,
thanks.
Richard.
Take care, all of you. See you next week.
Thanks, guys. Love you all. Y'all take care, and I'll see you next week. And remember, go to davidduke.com and listen to the show tomorrow.
Don't forget to tune in next Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, for the Dave and Duke Call-In Show, where David Gahari and the incomparable Dr. David Duke will take your phone calls and discuss whatever questions you want to bring to the table. See you next Sunday.